So, welcome back to the Phoenix Wellness Coaching Podcast, exploring women's and men's life choices. This is your first visit for this podcast, and it's great to have you here and on this journey with us. If you're coming back to us, then again, really good to have your continued support. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Jeanette Forder. I'm the founder of Phoenix Wellness. We're a wellness and life coaching service, and I have over 20 years experience through various corporate roles. My passion in life is helping women thrive through menopause, a major life-changing moment in most women's lives. But of course, we don't experience menopause in isolation, and how we navigate this stage can and does have an impact on the lives of those around us, whether that's our partners, our children, other family members, our friends, and of course, our work colleagues. So my passion is to help women understand what is actually happening to them so that they can successfully navigate it with the help and support of those around them. We all deserve to have that magnificent midlife. So I'm really delighted to be recording this second season of my podcast series. But as you can probably tell, we're going to take things with a slightly different approach this time as we're video podcasting. Seriously nerve-wracking and interesting. But not only do you get to listen to my conversation with some absolutely amazing and inspiring women and men, but you get to see us too. So for our first episode of this season, we're going to explore the role of faith and how that can help to provide an anchor in times of change in our lives. And for this, I want to introduce you to an amazing lady that I know, a lady called Maria, whom I've had the pleasure of knowing probably for about the past 4 or 5 years. Maria and I first met when we were both HR business partners working in the civil service. Unlike myself, Maria has made public service a large part of her life, with a career that spans many different departments and over 30 years of service. So what an amazing achievement. But Maria has been on a journey, and menopause has awakened a few questions for her, which we'll touch on later. But the one thing that drives Maria forward and is the bedrock for her life is her faith. So in this conversation, I want to learn how Maria's faith has sustained her throughout her life, through the ups and the downs, and how her faith is now guiding her on her new entrepreneurial journey. So, Maria, it's lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel very honoured.
Oh, it's a delight to have you here, because I know we've known each other for a few years, but really only got to know each other, with a capital K, very recently. Yeah. So just so that our audience can get to know you, can you start to tell us a little bit about your story? Because I know it's a really interesting story, not just about your faith, but also you had a really interesting background in a multicultural, multi-heritage family. I think you said in the 80s in London?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I am born in this early 70s. I'm the only child of my mum's first marriage. And for reasons of her own, decided that that marriage wasn't for her. But from the age of 2, I was raised, she met the man that I called daddy. And he was a black Ugandan man. They then had two boys. I've got two brothers that I was raised with who were dual heritage, and that sort of thing. We were born in Leeds, so kind of northerners, anything north of Watford. I think, you know, is a challenge somehow. I was raised in on a council estate that backs onto Millwall football ground. So obviously, being of a dual heritage family near Millwall, which obviously people that are aware of Millwall and their history, I'd like to think that they've moved on a lot since then. But back in the day, Mill wasn't the nicest places. Yeah. Being a Leeds lass as well, so kind of a bit of a double whammy, really. And at the time, National Front was very prevalent in Bermondsey. And very much had a presence there. So yeah, it was an interesting upbringing in that environment, being in a dual heritage family.
Absolutely. And I have to say, not being of a dual heritage background, but I understand the Leeds and the Millwall.
Yes.
And I think I said to you, slightly different tack, but my mother is a Leeds football fan and my dad supports Millwall. So you can imagine the conversations that they have about football. But yeah, certainly during the 80s, that must have been quite difficult. Yeah. But you mentioned that your mum was essentially, for a time, a single parent.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with your mum and how that shapes the way that you've become a mum?
My mum's amazing. As with all relationships, I think we drive each other up the wall at times. But absolutely love and adore my mum. She's very inspirational, very, very courageous. She made the decision to to walk away from the marriage, because it wasn't the marriage that she dreamt about as a child, you know, because of her upbringing and stuff. And then obviously in the early 70s, then got into a relationship with a black man that just, you know, been making herself a solo parent, and then, you know, partnering up with a black gentleman. It wasn't the done thing, particularly up in Leeds in the north. So yeah, so she's very brave. I admire her courage. And throughout their life together, you know, they then later went onto the mission field, and the fact that she went and embraced that, you know, with both hands and really got stuck in and embraced the culture and that sort of thing. So yeah,
that's probably where you get a lot of your compassion from, because obviously having worked with you, I know your passion around diversity and equality and actually getting to help people. So you probably got quite a bit of that from your mum, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. Both my mum and my dad, you know. And I think that's where I consider myself a very, even though I'm a white girl in a dual heritage family, I consider myself very privileged to have had that upbringing, to be able to see it and witness it and have my own, you know, my own journey within that and that sort of thing. So yeah, very privileged.
Excellent. So I know, like your mum, but for very different reasons, that you're a single mum yourself. Yeah. And I wonder, how has your mum, the way she was as a single mum, how has that been a real role model for you?
I think just the fact that she's just got so much courage and just embraces life and just gets on with it, really is kind of where I draw that strength from, and that independence, I suppose, really.
So I know when we've talked, your story for me, with your faith as well, but particularly it's a real story of resilience and courage, and some of the things that I know you've experienced yourself. So I wonder, would you mind telling us a little bit of your story about how you came to be a single mum?
Yeah, sure. So I, at the age of 16, I met Ray, my late husband, and the father of my child. And at 19, we got married. And then at age 24, whilst 3 months pregnant, I lost Ray in a car accident. So yeah, so that's been done the whole widow journey, solo parent journey and that sort of thing. So yeah, so that wasn't planned, obviously, particularly being so young. You know, often people think about widows, you know, when you're in your 60s or your 70s and you've lived life and that sort of thing. But yeah, it was quite a big shock for being so young.
Yeah, I mean, I know, again, we said, I met my husband at age 16, married by 21, so a little bit different, but the thought of losing, you know, the love of your life that early on in your relationship, and knowing that you're carrying the child as well, must have been a huge blow for you. So can you tell us a little bit about how your faith helped you through that time?
Yeah, so for me, I'm a Christian, evangelical Christian, which some people refer to as a happy clappy Christian, and for me, I came to faith when I was 12. So because of what was going on in my parents' adult world, we all of a sudden started being taken to church. Unfortunately, we were part of a church that had a really strong youth group and youth activities, youth camps every summer and that sort of thing, and that's where I really experienced and found faith for myself, and from then really that's where I kind of made the decision myself that I was going to follow in the Christian teachings, believing in Jesus and the Bible and that sort of thing. So when Ray died, obviously being 24, I think that's really when my faith got tested, because up until that point, as much as I'd seen negative and bad things around me growing up, hadn't really actually ever experienced anything that I would say was traumatic. So when I lost Ray and being pregnant, that was really when my faith kind of got tested. And you know, obviously I was in the first trimester of my pregnancy, so my immediate thing was, can't lose control, I've got to stay in control, because I can't get hysterical, can't lose control, because I might lose the baby, because that was the last, didn't want to lose my husband and then lose the baby under the shock and the trauma of it all. And that's really where I just kind of dug in and really just trusted that this God that I'd read about and believed about in the Bible, that he would carry me through and give me the strength to face the day, and really, you know, kind of dig into that foundation of learning and believing all of that kind of Christian stuff, really.
Yeah, that must have been, I mean, people talk about crisis of faith and being tested. Did you ever at any point kind of do that whole anger thing, think, why me, or what have you done?
Yeah, Oh, absolutely. I think, throughout the years, I've gone in and out of waves. I think anybody who's done the grief journey knows that it's not a one size fits all, and it doesn't end after a certain amount of time. It hasn't got time. With everything that goes through life, you get hit with another wave of realisation and that sort of thing. So for me, I've gone in and out of anger. Yeah, with God, with people, with situations, with circumstances. But I think, again, coming back to my faith in believing in a God that loves me unconditionally, and he understands that I'm angry. And actually, anger is a God-given emotion. How we deal with anger is another issue. But anger is actually a God-given emotion, and it's for us to just kind of trust him. Well, I made the choice. I didn't understand it. At 24, I'd hold my whole life in front of me. I was married to a guy who was absolutely fantastic with other people's children. And part of the excitement of being, you know, expectant mum was the excitement of seeing him with his own child. So that was a really hard pillow to swallow in that sense. But my faith really just kind of kept me sane, is the only way that I can describe it. That even though it was chaos and trauma and shock, in shock for a very long time, I had that inner peace that it God was going to carry me through it and bring me out the other side, same with my baby, not 6 months later and that sort of thing. So
there's a couple of things there that I wouldn't mind picking up on.
Yeah, sure.
I know when everybody's watching here, we go through, we have some questions, but I always go off piste. So I should probably warn you on that one.
No worries. So
a couple of things there that I thought was really interesting. One, when you talked about grief,
and
you say you never really come out that, it goes in cycles and waves.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And I think that's something that can help others, because we think of grief on the grief curve.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, once I get to this stage, done.
Yeah.
But of course, you can always regress and go backwards, so it's quite interesting. I think that will help a lot of people that are feeling that, to hear you say that. And then the other piece you talked about again was your inner peace, and that's obviously that real deep core that keeps you really strong and fighting and moving forward. Can you just explain a little bit about how that manifests for you? How do you use your inner peace?
I suppose for me, it's about, again, it comes back to that believing in a God that loves me unconditionally and wants nothing but the best for me. And that we've got free will and we've got free choice, you know, and that can be a blessing or a curse, depending on which way you go with those choices and decisions and that sort of thing. But for me, it's about making the choice that I can be angry and I can be resentful and I can stay in that victim state of mind, which is how I describe it, or I can choose that I don't understand this. And I remember at one point very early on saying, I don't understand this. Oh, I don't understand. I thought we were, you know, doing what we felt was the right thing, according to after praying and seeking God with what we believed was the right thing for our lives and our family in that situation. How has this happened when we thought we were doing the right thing? So for me, it's about, okay, it's not going to make sense. And I just got to the point where I can continue to tie myself up in knots trying to work it out. But the bottom line is, actually, even if I did ask and I did hear something tell me the answer, I didn't trust that I would actually hear it correctly, because I was so too raw to the emotions and too raw to the circumstances. So I can remember quite early on in that grief journey, really, was just making the decision of, I'm going to stop asking those questions because I don't understand it.
Yeah.
And no explanation is ever going to make me feel better about the fact that I'm a young, you know, expectant mum and my husband's gone. So I just stopped asking those questions and just thought, this is the reality, and I've either got to embrace it and make the best out of the situation. And come out of that came that foundation of just trusting God through all of that. And you know, there were times when I hung on for dear life, you know, that white knuckle ride, so to speak. I definitely, in my faith, because it has definitely been tested through that journey, but making that choice to trust, and then just trusting that it's going to work out,
That's really interesting, hearing about your inner peace and how your faith has sustained you. And I'm sure, as we've said, your faith has gone through various challenges. Do you see your faith as the guiding light of your life, life, or is it a crutch or an excuse for behaviours or different things that have happened?
I definitely see it personally as a guiding light, particularly as that has, you know, been a quite traumatic situation. I didn't have that inner strength or resilience to kind of navigate that season of my life. So I definitely see it as a guiding light. For me personally, you know, when you read Psalm 139, for example, it talks about God knowing you before your mother and father knew you were there. You know, he had a purpose for your life, that he's going to give you. He knows the ways that he wants you to go, and you know, and all that sort of stuff. So for me, I see, well, you know, if I believe in a God that knows every hair on my head and wants nothing but the best for me, why would I waste my energy trying to do it in my own understanding and my own strength? So for me, I pray about everything, and that sounds really trivial, which is where people say, oh, you know, you're just using your faith as a, you know, as a crutch or as an escapism of realism and that sort of thing. But actually, I'm like, well, for me, that's common sense. You know, I very much live my life on the proverb of, you know, the wise learn from other people's mistakes, the foolish learn from their own. So from my perspective, if I believe in this God that understands and knows everything, why wouldn't I go to ask him to guide me through and to navigate life and everyday situations and circumstances and that sort of thing? And I definitely, you know, as a solo parent navigating that world of raising my daughter on her on my own, I needed somebody to guide me through that, you know, how to discipline, how to raise her, how to encourage her, how to, you know, speak positive into her life, because our situation wasn't positive in that sense, you know. So, you know, she grew up without her dad, that, and she was hearing wonderful things about this man that was her daddy. And I remember her going through her own grieving process of hearing about this wonderful man, but him not being there, and helping her to how to navigate that. So there's definitely been key points in my life where I know that God has guided me in how to navigate and to navigate it, hopefully, I'd like to think, positively. Just navigating everyday life, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's just hearing you say there about your daughter actually going through her own grieving process. That's the thought that had never occurred to me, and possibly wouldn't to many other people, that actually she didn't get to know her father. Yeah. And whilst you're dealing with your own ongoing grief and coming to terms, you've got to help her through it as well. That's the side that you never actually think about at all.
Yeah.
So it's a good job you did have that inner strength and that guide with your faith.
Yeah, thank you. I think I did need professional help at that point as well, which then I drew on organisations that dealt specifically, there were specialists with childhood grief, you know, because from my perspective, here was a child, she was grieving something that she never had.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get my head around, well, how can you grieve something you've never had? I can understand if she's had him and then all of a sudden he's not there, but how do you process grieving something that you've never actually had? And it really helped me to understand where her brain development was in her as she grew older, what she was understanding. She was of that age where she was understanding who her mummy and her daddy was and a grandma and a granddad, and kind of putting the family tree together almost. And she was then identifying what she didn't have. And of course, when you're surrounded, or what you perceive to be surrounded, obviously that's not the reality of life. There are lots of solo parents. But the solo parents' friends that I was moving with at the time, their children still had access to their father. So that my daughter was still hearing, oh, my daddy this, my daddy that.
Yeah,
you know, and she'd never had that. So I had to, you know, and God just really guided me how to navigate that in a really sensitive way, and not to dismiss it, because it was her journey, it was her reality.
Yeah.
But just to help me understand it, so I wasn't then perpetually crying myself to sleep every night, which I did on occasion, and that sort of thing. And that's why I'm saying, you know, the grief doesn't, you learn to cope with it. But there's always, it's like that old adage example, isn't it? It's like an onion, you know, you peel off a layer and something else comes to light, and, you know, and that sort of thing. And just really embracing that so that I can navigate that for both myself and my daughter, who was mum and dad too, as positively as possible, really.
So I also wanted to touch on menopause and faith.
That's exciting.
The big M, yes. And I know from my
own... Do they mix, Jeanette? That's the question.
Well, yeah. Can one help the other?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know from my own journey and everything I read, Yeah. Menopause, again, is a bit like opening Pandora's box in some respects for us. And as women, we start to suddenly not know ourselves or start to want to find ourselves, which sounds a bit kind of quite glib, but actually you do start to notice things that might be missing in your life. And I know for myself, I've been wanting to explore that spiritual side, the emotional side of what makes me who I am. And I wonder, obviously you found your faith, as you said, at an early age. I think you said you were about 12 or 13. Has that changed at all? Has your thoughts towards your faith and your God, has that changed? Or have you asked questions as you've gone into menopause? Or has menopause strengthened it?
Well, I think it's only really, to be honest, Jeanette, it's probably only because of, you know, having a friendship with you and having the privilege of having access to your wealth of knowledge about menopause that I've actually, with hindsight, looked back and thought, oh, actually, I think that probably was more menopause related. I think for me, my menopause journey was that obviously going through the trauma of losing my husband, being pregnant, and obviously, you know, you know more about my life story, but losing my husband was one of many things that I've experienced, unfortunately, quite a lot of traumatic death in our family, in our friendship circles. And for me, when my perimenopause started, I found that I just couldn't control my emotions. And I prided myself on being able to control my emotions because I'd been to hell and back. And I'd controlled my emotions and I'd held it together. And I really proud, you know, I was very proud of being that way. And then all of a sudden, here I am, and I've got absolutely no control over this. And one minute I'm fine and dandy, the next minute I'm bawling my eyes out, or I'm getting road rage. Road rage, I think, is probably something that is more tangible that other people might notice more. Lack of patience and that sort of thing. So I think for me, once I got to the point where I just had to face that maybe this was how my perimenopause was affecting me, I needed to go and get help. And that's when, obviously, then when I engaged with the doctor and got HRT, and it's really helped. Really helped. Not gone totally, but at least I feel like I'm in a lot more control of my emotions now.
Yeah, that's the emotional impact of menopause is something that most women, me and yourself included, don't ever expect.
Yeah.
Because we only ever talk about hot flushes and the physical stuff. So when you start to question things, I'm like, you're road rage here. I get TV rage as well. So I start yelling at the TV. So, and I had teammate rage, you know, where we worked together, you knew I could have a really bad day with the team, and it was nothing they did and nothing I could put my finger on. So I know that estrogen has an awful lot to answer for on things like that. But I guess in those moments, you could turn to your faith to go, no, I'm still who I think I am.
Absolutely. I did have a blip last year. I hit a certain anniversary, and it kind of set, every anniversary sets me into that, you know, what would have been, what could have, would have, should have been, and that sort of thing, because that's what anniversaries do, don't they? They bring up all of the hurt and the sad times and the memories and all that sort of stuff. And I remember going into a really, really dark place. And I think, to be honest, if being a Christian for nearly 40 years, as much as I've got been very angry with God and had to deal with bouts of anger and talking myself out, and maybe I'm going for counselling on some occasions, there's been things where I've needed to go and seek professional help, but I've always had that foundation of my faith. But this, you know, last year I hit this anniversary, and it just sent me on a spiral of even question whether God was real. And that was the first time through all of what I've gone through in life that I actually questioned whether God was real. And that, to be honest, has been one of the darkest places, because even though my emotions might be everywhere, my circumstances, and I might be living through a war zone, I've always had my faith to fall back on. And that's been my foundation and my anchor to, you know, just dig in and trust. But here, for the first time, I was actually questioning whether God was actually real. And that really kind of freaked me out, to be honest. And I'd lost that inner peace because I was questioning whether it was real. So that was quite a scary place to be, to be honest, when, you know, in light of my faith journey. And I think, you know, again, I think that's really the thing from learning from you about menopause, is that that was probably my emotions and my hormones that contributed to that time. And actually, as a Christian, particularly when you've believed something for so long, I think it's right that you should every now and then take a stock take and check and making sure that, you know, am I believing this just because it's a load of mumbo jumbo, or is it because it's a sincere belief and faith system for whatever the reason?
And that sort of faith thing. Is like a lot of things, it will change over time.
Yes.
Based on your circumstances, your age, where you are, things that are happening. And it probably is really healthy to stop and go, actually, is this what I believe?
Yeah.
And why? Sometimes you can't answer the why.
Yeah.
But just going back and just doing that double take is probably pretty healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. And there's been poignant points in my life where I've had those. Mm. Okay. Why do I believe this stuff? You know, am I just a sheep following the crowd, or, you know, and do I actually believe it for myself? Can I stand on my own convictions? Because I genuinely, sincerely believe it for myself, and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's been definitely been a journey.
Yeah, life is but a journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know you said earlier that you've always trusted that God had a purpose for you.
Yes.
And knows what your purpose is. And obviously in the last couple of years, from a professional standpoint, your journey has kind of gone off in a different direction.
Yeah.
Not unlike a lot of menopausal women.
Yeah.
But obviously you were a civil servant for 30 something years.
Yeah,
which is huge.
Yeah.
And now you're an entrepreneur.
I know.
You're one of the 50-something fempreneurs, which is fantastic. Or it might even be 40-something. I may have just aged you there, so I apologise on that one. So
I need to embrace that, I think. Fempreneur.
Fempreneur,
and get my lips around it.
Yeah, I love it. So, you know, when you decided to go it alone, how has that journey been for you, and how has your faith helped you?
I think the point of me launching or going out on my own and leaving the service really was a 6-year journey for me. So Charlie, my daughter, Charlotte Louise, Charlie, known as Charlie, when she hit 18, I'd been planning for 9 years that when she reached 18 and had finished school age, that we would have a year in Australia. And that was really a defining moment for me on my solo parent journey, was to kind of disengage, to then think, okay, she's an adult now, what does the next season hold for me? Because my whole life was about surviving the grief, being a solo parent, raising my daughter the best way that I could be with the wonderful family and friend support that I had around me. I didn't do it all on my own. But it was, okay, so what does life hold now? We've reached 18, and I can remember thinking, oh, thank God for that. We've reached adulthood, and neither of us have killed each other in the process.
She's no longer a teenager.
Absolutely, you know. And that sort of thing. So for me, it was about having that year out to reevaluate life, take stock. I've always loved my career in civil service. I've been very fortunate and blessed to have worked with some amazing people and had some wonderful opportunities. But it was a really defining moment for me. And it was whilst I had that year out in golden sandy beaches in Noosa. Anybody who knows, the paradise of Noosa in Queensland knows what I'm talking about. And really just taking stock and seeing what happens. And I think for me, the business came out of that time, really, because my whole thing was, I can't have gone through all of this trauma and hardship for, you know, being a Christian, for God not to use that in a positive way. And so that's really kind of what underpins my journey of setting up the business and kind of in branching on that fempreneur journey, really.
So tell us a little bit about your new business.
My new business. So I consider myself to be a HR business partner and a coach and a mentor. And really, I'm about prevention, being solution focused and being restorative where things have gone wrong. And by that, I mean, you know, working in service. The civil service are the lawmakers of the UK. So they're the ones that kind of set the direction for employment law and that sort of thing. They've also actually got leading best practice as an employer of, you know, hundreds of thousands of staff and that sort of thing. So for me, it's about bringing that expertise and that knowledge that I've gained by being in that environment out to the world to help smaller companies that don't have the luxury of having that, and really just to help them navigate it. Well, the bottom line is I love people. I care for people. You know, we live our lives. You can't just go to work and then come home and separate the different aspects of your life. We are a whole being. And it's about us, you know, navigating that holistically. And that's the approach that I take. So I'm definitely not the HR people police, but I'm definitely about being people centric, helping navigate that employment law, you know, what you have to do as an employer, and also, and just kind of helping to blend all of that together, really. I call myself a business partner because it's about, you know, working with business owners. It's their baby. They know what they want. They know the reasons why they set up their business. So it's about me coming alongside to understand that, so that then I can bring my HR professionalism and all what I've learned through studying CIPD and being a civil servant, and bringing that together so that it comes to fruition, so that their businesses can grow and flourish and be sustainable, whatever their business cycle looks like to them, and that sort of thing.
So for any prospective customers that might be listening or watching, how can they find you?
How can they find you? My mgwarrensolutions.com is my website. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, and all that sort of stuff.
All the usual places.
All the usual places, yeah.
Excellent.
Mastering the world of social media is a joy that I'm yet to embrace.
Oh, you're going to embrace it here when we're out on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. Been launched into the world now, haven't I?
There's no getting away with it. So before we kind of finish off and close down the conversation, there's a question that I ask all of my guests.
Yeah.
And that is, if you could go back in time to a younger Maria, whether she is just met Ray or where she is in her life, what's the one piece of advice that you would give her based on what you've learned so far?
With hindsight, which is a wonderful thing.
It is.
And it's a shame you don't have it as foresight. I think for me, it would be to just dig in and trust these. It'll all work out in the end, and you'll come out the other side.
Fab. That's brilliant. And it, for those people that have listened to other podcasts, that's quite a common theme that comes through, that belief and that trust. So it's been absolutely fab talking to you. Great
Thank
conversation,
you.
Learning so much more about you, and thank you for your openness as well, because sometimes talking about these things can be quite difficult, and I'm sure that how you've approached your life and the things that you've gone through will resonate and inspire many other women, and I just love that I can find people like yourself, bring those stories to life and share them, because if one story inspires another woman, then that's another woman we've almost, in inverted commas, saved. For me, I really wanted to share your story because, as I said, menopause really opened up a new area of self-development for me, something that I had not expected to want to look at, and that was to explore my own spiritual side. And I know that I need to nurture that within myself.
Yeah.
You know, I come at it from a slightly different standpoint. My family, my husband was confirmed churchgoer in the church choir, actually, when he met me. So let's not say what he doesn't do now. And my father was also confirmed, was an altar boy, so part of the church. Whereas I never lived that life. We used to go to Sunday school early on, but my father was always, I'll start you off on that path and then you can decide. So didn't really get so much into that being a churchgoer. For me, faith has always been a belief in something bigger than me, and not having to go to a building to actually follow that faith. But I'm still exploring that, and I know we've had some quite in-depth conversations around what that looks like, and I'm still learning. And so it was really important for me to talk to someone who found their faith at that early age, knows what it means to them, and how it's helped you throughout, and actually continues to guide you through all of those stages, even when you're saying to your God, what the devil are you doing to me?
Yeah, exactly.
Pardon the pun. What are you doing to me?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
It's still there as your inner peace, which is fantastic. And as I say, if our story, your story, my story can help other women so that they can feel that they've got that fulfilled life, then that's it. That's all we can possibly ask for. So it's really lovely to talk to you. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us? Any, you know, nuggets of wisdom or funny bits you wanted to share before we finally close?
No, just thank you very much for the opportunity to share. And just embrace menopause and all that it brings, really. There is a light at the end of the tunnel at some point. I've just got to hope the tunnel's not that long.
Yeah, the tunnel is a different for every woman, but it is a tunnel.
Yeah.
You're right. It is a tunnel of transition from one place to another.
Yeah.
And even if you're in a dark stage, there will be a light at the end of the tunnel, and you'll get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So for any other followers on here who are interested, in season one of the Phoenix Wellness Coaching Podcast, we talked to another lovely lady called Nicola, who really talked about the importance of reconnecting with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And in that, she found her spiritual side. Okay. And she talked about how she had been very much a go-getter, earning lots of money, busy life, actually was hoping for a second child. That never happened. And then she lost her grandmother. Mm-hmm. And at that point, she started to think there's must be something more. So this conversation really is quite a nice, yes, a nice follow on from there, which is fantastic. But thank you again.
Thank you
to everybody who is listening and now watching, which is very exciting. And I'm really looking forward to this, completing this season of the Phoenix Wellness Podcast. And I've got lots of other interesting guests, male and female, different stories where things that would have normally or would have been expected to define them and define what they can achieve in life and how they've overcome that or how it's helped them to lead a different life. So if you want to learn more, absolutely subscribe. I think on both YouTube and on the podcast, you can click a button that says subscribe. So every time I release a new podcast, you can get it. Love you to comment, tell us what you think. And if you've got a story, give me a shout. Maybe we'll bring your story there. But if you want some more help around menopause or well-being generally, you can contact us through the website, Phoenix Wellness Coaching, or reach out to me by email to Jeanette@phoenixwellness.co.uk. And on the website, there's lots and lots of information. You can also follow me. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn, and I'm also on Instagram, but you have to find me there at Your Menopause Shrink, because that's apparently what I can do. I can help you navigate your menopause. So I'm really looking forward to talking and seeing you all again very soon, and have a good day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.